We found a network of missile operating bases located throughout North Korea.
Hidden nukes become an emerging issue with North Korea. It's Wednesday, November 14th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, trade on the U.S. Vice President's Japan agenda, reading with Asian American authors, solo and fake trading markets, faster phone connections, and the loss of a superhero legend. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A U.S. non-governmental group says it has identified at least 13 undeclared bases in North Korea capable of hiding missiles. The Washington-based Center for Strategic and International Studies said in a report issued this week that its conclusions are based on commercial satellite imagery, interviews with North Korean defectors, and interviews with U.S. intelligence and government officials. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with one of the authors of the report, Joseph Bermudez. He's the Senior Fellow for Imagery Analysis at the Beyond Parallel Program at SAIS, the Center for Strategic and International Security in Washington.
I would say that North Korea's ballistic missile threat and its nuclear threat, which would use the ballistic missiles as delivery system, remains very significant and has not changed in the past 10 years.
So what did you find?
What we found were a network of missile operating bases located throughout North Korea. Some of these facilities have been mentioned directly or indirectly over the years, but very few, if any, have been specifically located. What we did was we went in, we identified these, we disambiguated a great deal of information, we validated other information and negated additional information to come up with our listing of sites, and we'll be publishing additional reports going forward.
Where do we go from here? I mean, what is this enough, do you think, for the U.S. to change its position?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. The people who are doing the actual talking, both, you know, face-to-face and back-channel, are really intelligent people. They have a plan. I'm not privy to that plan. However, I want to make sure that the public understands what's actually out there so they can inform their policymakers to inform those who are actually involved in the discussions. I think that's most important, that we have a base of information that is as valid as it can be at the unclassified level so that the discussion can be informed so we can move forward in a realistic manner.
Does this show some insufficiency as far as U.S. intelligence is concerned that they haven't come up with it, or do you think they have and they just haven't told us about it?
I believe that the U.S. intelligence community, along with its allies, have a very good understanding of North Korea's ballistic missile forces and their disposition. I would say that they probably don't have a perfect understanding, and that's why I want to see a full and verifiable list produced by the North Koreans to move forward with. North Korea is an incredibly challenging target when it comes to intelligence collection. And North Korea has, since the late 60s at least, if not further back, pursued this deliberate policy of trying to conceal or deceive its capabilities with nuclear, chemical, biological, and ballistic missile capability. If we don't recognize that, and if we don't push hard on that, they're going to allow us to believe what we want to believe or allow us to settle for something that is insufficient in the long run.
Joseph Bermudez, Senior Fellow for Imagery Analysis at the Beyond Parallel Program at the Center for Strategic and International Security here in Washington. He was speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now on voanews.com. President Trump says report of North Korean missile bases is fake news. Pence in Asia to highlight U.S. commitment. China scours social media, erases thousands of accounts. In the land of sushi, squid moves out of reach. A study says millions of small Asian farmers miss out on seeds of resilient to climate change. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence was in Japan Tuesday, and he met Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, urging him to cut his country's trade surplus with the United States, and he pressed for a bilateral trade agreement.
The United States has had a trade imbalance with Japan for too long, and American products and services too often face barriers to compete fairly in Japanese markets. It's for that reason that we welcome the steps that have been taken to address these issues over the past 2 years, beginning with the U.S.-Japan economic dialogue. But the best opportunity for free, fair, and reciprocal trade will come in a bilateral trade agreement. Mr. Prime Minister, we welcome the decision that you and President Trump reached in September to begin negotiations on a bilateral trade agreement.
The two countries agreed in September to begin negotiations next year. Pence is on an Asia swing that will take him to a meeting of regional powers in Singapore and the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation meeting in Papua New Guinea in place of President Donald Trump. The Trump administration is considering imposing tariffs of up to 25% on imported cars and parts on national security grounds, a move that would hurt Japan's exports. Stephen Nagy, a senior associate professor in politics and international studies at the Tokyo-based International Christian University, tells VOA's Victor Beatty Japan is reluctant to enter a bilateral pact, in part because the trade imbalance is based on what he called 1980s logic.
By and large, most of the issues that were at friction in terms of economic relations between the United States and Japan were solved in the 1980s. Second, I think we should recognize that even if we opened up the Japanese markets here, a lot of the goods being produced by the United States are just not in demand by the Japanese, for example, large vehicles. Much of the agricultural products are based on being produced in very, very large farms. The Japanese consumers are particular about what kinds of foods they're consuming, and they're really resistant to consume food products that are produced on mass scale. Third, and importantly, I think the Japanese think that the best way to deal with the deficit is to buy more American goods to, for example, some agricultural products, but also military goods, as well as invest in the United States.
A bilateral free trade agreement is a non-starter in Japan?
I don't think it's a non-starter. I do think that there's a possibility of a free trade agreement if it embodies much of the rules and regulations and guidelines that were and agreements that were laid out in the initial TPP-11, in particular focusing on intellectual property rights, limitations for state-owned enterprises, and enhancing cooperation on the digital economy.
Countries including China, Japan, India, and the 10 members of the ASEAN group apparently are trying to forge a regional comprehensive economic partnership during a meeting in Singapore, and apparently the effort is going to be delayed until next year instead of an agreement reached by the end of this year. What is the problem there?
Well, I think there's several problems. First of all, on the Chinese side, the trade pressures from the United States is making them reconsider what is the direction that they should be doing moving forward in terms of trade policy in general. Second, there are challenges with one of the partners within the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreement, in particular India. They're not known for their policies in terms of supporting free trade, and getting them on board means there's going to be important compromises from the Indian side. Three, the Chinese economy is slowing down, so they need to rethink what is the value of the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership and how can it be altered so that they can reap more economic benefit from this kind of partnership.
Will the RCEP be an alternative to trade tensions with the United States?
No, I think the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership does offer some benefits for the partners within the region, in particular ASEAN and China. But the kinds of products that are being espoused or that will be traded through this kind of trade agreement really are low-value products that China does well, but they don't bring that economic boost, that adrenaline shot to your economy that a different kind of agreement would have. The tensions between the United States and China, not only shared between the United States and China, other countries such as Japan and other regions such as the EU also share many of the concerns that the United States have vis-a-vis China and its trade policies. So until those are adjusted, I don't think there's going to be a let-up pressure on China, and I don't think that China will be able to engage in other forms of free trade relations because of the imbalances that do come with China joining these large free trade agreements.
China is pushing global free trade as opposed to protectionism and is key to the RCEP, which covers half of the world's population and includes 16 countries, including Japan and India. The world's biggest free trade pact would overshadow the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, multinational trade pact the U.S. pulled out of last year. Meanwhile, in Singapore, Chinese Premier Li Keqiang on Tuesday said Beijing hopes that a code of conduct can be reached with Southeast Asia over the disputed South China Sea in 3 years, which he said could benefit free trade. He insisted his country does not seek homogeneity or expansion. Happening now in Asia, U.S. President Donald Trump has weighed in on a report that North Korea has at least 13 undeclared bases capable of hiding missiles, calling the report fake news. Trump said the story in the New York Times concerning North Korea developing missile bases is inaccurate. Judge for yourself at VOA Asia Facebook. As you stay up to date with VOA, you're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us today on VOA Asia. Diversity in the comic and graphic novel industry in the United States has increased with a growing number of artists who have international backgrounds. VOA's Danya Iman reports from San Diego, California, on two Asian American authors who are contributing to the industry's diversity.
Comic and graphic novel fans in the U.S. have seen an increase in diversity from artists with international backgrounds who bring their own uniqueness based on their life stories to their work. Thi Bui, who was a Vietnamese child refugee, is the author of The Best We Could Do. It's a gripping illustrated memoir inspired by her journey to the United States.
It's my origin story, which for me happens to include the Vietnam War and all of the crazy history of the 20th century in Vietnam and Asia, and then how all of that led to my family leaving illegally in a boat, ending up in Malaysia, where my brother was born, and then eventually getting resettled in the U.S. in the late 1970s.
Bui, who is 43, wants to be the voice of refugees. She focuses on current topics, such as people being deported from the U.S. in her next graphic novel, Nowhere Land, which she plans to publish next year.
Well, being in the entertainment industry and making something that's like really enjoyable to read is an excellent Trojan horse for bringing in history and politics and the stories of people who are less powerful right now. Refugees are among the least powerful people, and they need other people standing up for them and fighting with them. So I think it's really important as people who came here as refugees to remind everybody that not everybody wanted us here when we came, and so it's our duty to stand up for people who need extra voices on their side right now.
Author of Genesis 2 comic, Alan Ling, whose Chinese parents came to the U.S. as political exiles, says diversity in the comic industry is crucial because it is still dominated by white male artists. This is especially important at large events such as the annual Comic-Con International.
But I'm noticing that there is more diversity occurring, and there are artists everywhere around the world, but they're not always represented at Comic-Con.
Ling says he appreciates how fans are focusing more on the artist's creation.
I think now it doesn't matter what race you are, as long as your stuff is really good. And I think what's nice about comic books is nobody cares what you look like. They just care about what you're doing.
Danya Iman and Ronan Zakaria in San Diego, VOA News.
Coming up, solo time becomes more valuable. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This news from VOA Asia. The original architects of Hong Kong's 2014 umbrella movement are set to go on trial next Monday. They face possible jail time as the city's courts continue to prosecute protest leaders 4 years after the massive demonstrations came to an end. Follow and share the developments and much more on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, markets of single persons and counterfeit products are the topics on today's edition of VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
A new trend of solo activities is blossoming in Japan. The practice is so widespread, it even has its own name, ohitori-sama, or on your own. Analysts say that Japan's demographic makeup, where more than one-third of households contain just one person, makes it perfect for the solo market, with many also craving me time in a fast-paced, interconnected, and workaholic society. In 1980 in Japan, only 1 in 50 men had never been married by the age of 50, and 1 in 22 women. That ratio is now 1 in 4 and 1 in 7, respectively. Experts say the pressures and speed of modern-day life, aggravated by social media, are also cause for the rise in solo time. Motoko Matsushita is a market analyst at Nomura Research Institute.
Many people wish to have a moment alone because they are tired of social medias where you have to answer right away, like what others are doing, post quickly, etc.
Signs of ohitori-sama are everywhere in Japan. From solo karaoke booths to partitioned booths in restaurants to theme parks that let singles jump the queue at certain rides. The super solo society has even become a buzzword among social scientists and market gurus. During its annual Singles Day sale this year, e-commerce giant Alibaba set a record with more than $30 billion in sales in just 24 hours. While the majority of products are genuine, imitations do abound. Sneakers that look like Adidas are branded Ababis. Underwear resembling Calvin Klein are called Kaiwen Kani. And the alcohol section offers a whiskey named Jack David. U.S. and European companies have long complained about the theft of intellectual property in China, a central issue in the U.S.-China trade war. Local resident Wang.
Our country needs to rely more on innovation and have its own brand. Then we can make our national industry really strong instead of copying.
Alibaba's Taobao app is one of the world's largest online trading platforms with 634 million active monthly users. In 2016, the app was put back onto the U.S. Trade Representative's blacklist of most notorious sites for the sale of pirated goods and violations of intellectual property. In a statement, Alibaba said it requires merchants to respect IP rights and has stepped up efforts to take down counterfeit products. The company also takes infringers to court, filing 48 lawsuits against counterfeiters in the past year. President Xi Jinping renewed his own pledge this week to protect IP rights. A law is set to take place on January 1st to punish e-commerce companies if fake goods are sold on their platforms. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia. Cambodia is celebrating breaking a Guinness World Record by building a working 87.3-meter-long wooden dragon boat. The record was previously held by China with a 77.8-meter-long vessel. No doubt someone is already planning to float a bigger dragon boat. This big story and more come your way on VOA 60 Online and VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, if you're really lucky and live in the United States cities of Houston, Indianapolis, Los Angeles, or Sacramento, you now have access to a 5G network. And if you live anywhere else, just be patient. A 5G mobile network is coming your way, and it's already arriving in some countries. Faster than a download, VOA's Kevin Enoch shares the latest.
In the tiny state of Monaco, on the Mediterranean Riviera, the future has arrived. These antennas are upgrades that will allow Monaco to handle the increased demands that 5G devices will put on networks.
We are in the process of installing the antennas on pretty much all the roofs because the aim is to cover the whole of Monaco. It is the antennas you can see behind me that we are in the process of installing, and they will allow us to cover the whole principality, to have coverage everywhere inside.
What is a 5G network? Without getting too deep into jargon, it will give your wireless device the ability to do a lot more of whatever you do online, and do it faster and more efficiently.
La 5G, c'est 10 fois plus de puissance.
5G is 10 times stronger, so that allows us to provide coverage for all multimedia uses for the many more people who will be connected. 5G reduces the connection wait by 10 times, and therefore we can connect immediately, and that is essential for new uses such as connected cars. And 5G also allows at least 10 times as many connections per square meter, and that is a very important factor in the technological revolution.
But the networks they need to work on haven't quite caught up yet. Experts say as our lives, our homes, and our cars become increasingly wired, we're going to need all that new bandwidth. A few U.S. cities have pockets of 5G, but don't expect the speedy new services to really get rolling until the end of next year or even into 2020. Besides Monaco, it's no surprise that the countries that are most likely to roll out 5G first are South Korea, China, Japan, and the United States. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Stan Lee, the creator of Black Panther, Spider-Man, Iron Man, the Hulk, and many other popular comic heroes, died on Monday at the age of 95. VOA's Latika Hoke turns the page on Lee's extraordinary life.
This is Stan Lee, and if you didn't know it, you're
people who have never heard of Stan Lee are likely to have heard of Spider-Man or some other superhero from Lee's Marvel comic book series. Many adults keep in the attic boxes full of Stan Lee's comic books that they collected as kids.
In third grade, I started collecting comic books in Kansas, and I was a devotee, and I still am, to comic books, Marvel, DC, all of the above. And the first comic I ever bought was the Avengers number 243, which you can still see the trace marks. I've never given up a comic I bought. They're all saved in boxes, and you can see trace marks on them.
Born in New York as Stan Lee Martin Lieber, Lee was always attracted to books and movies about heroes. After getting a job with a comic book publisher, he soon started writing stories under the pseudonym Stan Lee. He was so successful that the company urged him to form a team to create new comic heroes. The result was a series of Marvel comics with world-renowned superheroes such as the Hulk, Spider-Man, Iron Man, and Daredevil, and teams such as the X-Men, the Fantastic Four, and the Avengers.
When I first wanted to do Spider-Man, I told my publisher about it, and I said, I want to do this guy called Spider-Man. He's a teenager. He's got a million problems. Everything goes wrong. My publisher said, Stan, you've lost it. He said, first of all, nobody likes spiders. You can't call a hero Spider-Man. Secondly, a teenager can't be a hero. He can only be a sidekick. And lastly, he said, you say he's got all kind of problems. Don't you understand, Stan? He's a hero. Heroes don't have problems. That's why they're heroes. That shows what I knew.
But it was these human traits that made Lee's characters popular worldwide. They were falling in love, getting wounded, and struggling with financial problems. In 1972, Lee became Marvel Comics publisher and editorial director. 4 years later, 72 million copies of Spider-Man were sold. Spider-Man and many other heroes Lee created transitioned into blockbuster movies, grossing about $20 billion worldwide at the box office. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia, and as you already know, you can find us streaming on VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com. We're also on another Facebook page. That's VOA Burmese in Myanmar. We thank everybody who's been following our program there, as so many developments are happening in your country. We're glad that you're with us each and every day. Each and every day, we're glad to have our director, Tracy Carter, engineer, John Ellison, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a great day.